want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track Open Line. This is a special program for association organizations. Our topic today is strategic planning for your association. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, then we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program. On your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. And you'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since you may want to share some of the ideas and consider them and implement them with your team and trusted advisors. Quite a few people just signing in now. On the lower right-hand corner of the screen is a print icon, and you can print out the slides for today to take notes on it. Our special guest with us today is David Schaefer. David, by the way, is a very cool guy. He served as president, managing director, business advisor, and vice president of sales for multiple companies for both profit and for nonprofit industries. He has worked with companies that include manufacturing, construction, healthcare, elder care, distribution, service, information technology, and the list goes on. So in other words, David has been selected for this program because of his vast experience in both profit and nonprofit to address the issues that each of you are facing within your associations to keep your members engaged and maybe to find some topics also to help them in planning for the future. David has been recognized for his ability to effectively integrate all aspects of businesses, including financial management, information services, infrastructure, sales, sales strategies, and operations. David is working with an organization called Pebble, and I love the name Pebble. Ted Margin is the CEO and founder. You drop the pebble of an idea in, and it just resonates throughout the pond. And that's the goal for today, is to take some ideas, drop them in the center, and watch it just resonate through out to your members to help them to enrich your organization and to enrich their organizations and their lives. At the end of our program, also, registration for our next program will begin, and the topic will be operational excellence from service to delivery. And actually, Ted Marchison, CEO of Pebble, will be our special guest for that program. I want to welcome you, David. Thank you for taking your time out of your busy day and travels to share your ideas with us.
Not a problem, Dana. Thank you. And to everyone who signed on, for my West Coast friends, good morning. Other parts of the country, good afternoon. And for those of you who are still on lunch, I hope you're enjoying it and your day is going very, very well. First of all, just as a very, very quick addition to what Dana was referring to, we are going to focus quite a bit on the area of strategic planning, and we'll focus on it as it relates to associations. But I want to preface some of what we're going to discuss with the following, and that is many of the areas we're going to look at and the policies, procedures, programs, recommendations, processes that we will discuss work just as well in a for-profit organization. And in fact, over the years, many of these recommendations have come from resulting work that we have done with private equity firms, investment firms, that are looking to assess the value of companies that they have targeted for acquisition. There are multiple elements that we'll take a look at as we look at strategic planning, and that is really what is value and value-based, and then how do we get our hands around this, what seems to be an endless amount of opportunity of work, and focus in on some very key initiatives that can help bring value to the association. With that in mind, the agenda that we're going to take a look at is, and I'm trying to work this, if you bear with me, to move to our next slide.
I'm going to put a push forward?
Yeah, if you can. There we go. There's the agenda. You know, one of the strengths and one of the weaknesses associated with a program like this is that we're all looking at our own computers, and you hope that everything is moving in the right direction. But hopefully you've got the agenda outline on the screen right now. What we're going to talk about are some realities and perceptions of associations. I've had the opportunity to work with multiple associations that range from National Association of CPAs that are bringing value to all of their members, to the Salvation Army with all of its chapters, multiple construction organizations, the Association for Corporate Growth, which is primarily multiple companies and members who are in the financial banking, investment banking organization, and then for various school boards, which are going through challenges and tribulations right now with federal funding available, state funding, and we've also worked together with multiple hospitals and non-for-profit organizations, including churches and other religious organizations. And I put up realities and perceptions because what we'll get into is that when you are a member, as particularly a board member of an association, you find that somehow the perceptions of what's going on out in all of the regional offices or within the community, that a lot of the perception is not reality yet in the mind of individuals and organizations. Perception and reality intersect. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Want to get into some common points of discussion. It's going to be an area associated with really, what is it that occurs within an association? You know, do we do planning? Don't we do planning? Why is planning important for an association? We'll look at what our association is trying to accomplish. And again, I know we have a broad range of different organizations on this conference. So hopefully as I go through some of these, we'll find some common ground that makes sense. And then we'll get into the actual strategic planning. When you are part of a national organization or a regional organization of a larger national one, the need to do strategic planning and lay out an appropriate plan to set some direction is critical. And it's a very overused word, strategic planning, yet it's been my experience that many organizations typically pull out whatever plan they had the previous year, blow a little bit of dust off it, add or subtract a certain percentage of the budget, and move ahead and say, there you go, but it's really not an executable plan. Which leads to the last part, which is measuring results and strategy implementation. And again, for those of you that are part of a national organization, we'll look at bringing value to regional members as well as members at large, and how do we measure results to assure that we are, in fact, bringing some value to everyone that's associated with our group. So with that as a quick outline, let me move us forward to take a look at what we call realities and perceptions. Having been on the board of multiple associations, again, for-profit and not-for-profit, for those of you who are board members and are listening in on this, my hat's off to you. It is, in many cases, a thankless job. We get involved with associations because we want to do good for the community. We want to do good for our membership, but somehow we always seem to be the brunt of the conversation. When there is a national association, regional offices sometimes feel that we are paying a percentage or a due associated with the national office, and that the national office really isn't bringing value. They don't understand what happens regionally and locally. A perfect example for me was the Salvation Army, which has a national presence. We all equate the Salvation Army with having you know, Christmas time with the Santas and the collections and what have you, but yet the national office here in Southern California had multiple issues on whether or not the monies being collected were going regionally for the right use, or was it there to you know, build the campus here in Southern California that was a beautiful campus, and what is it really doing for us locally. The chapters themselves can't really measure effectiveness. There was an organization that I was just working with that does have regional offices that works with children, and the regional offices were each in a position where they could raise funding on their own through private and corporate donations, and yet felt that, you know, the national presence was a hindrance rather than a support. So they looked at it and said, from our perspective as a regional office, a regional charity, a regional not-for-profit, you know, what value is this corporate organization giving us? It really isn't doing very much. And in fact, they have once or twice a year a national meeting, and it seems to be really more of a social network, social get-together. Everybody can shake hands and see how you're doing. And in today's difficult economic time, from a national perspective, how do we put programs together that are going to encourage the regions to come and join us? I mentioned the competition for funding is getting fiercer and much more difficult. You know, you just have to put on the television every day and you can see that, whether it's in education, training, what have you. I'll share a little anecdote or a side note. We did some work with a local community college here. The nature of the program was to raise funds through the state of California with support from the federal government to primarily train individuals who are on welfare to become caregivers for the elderly. And the funding was so difficult to get. When we did get the funding, the colleges looked to try to supplement some of their shortfalls with that funding, and we never were able to execute the program effectively the way we wanted to. And again, it led to more strategic planning, more business alliance, and then some additional funding that was under better control and better measurements. As a board member, if there's volunteer time, it actually exceeds my full-time job. Again, I had the opportunity, and it started with something that I absolutely loved, which was to be involved with education, particularly for children in the K through 8 arena. And I sat on the board of a private school and donated a significant amount of time to the meetings and the committees and the work we were doing. And it really got to a point that because of a lack of strong strategic planning and putting in place the appropriate processes and trying to prioritize what we wanted to do, that we ended up spending hours upon hours upon hours of doing work. And I don't know if we were productive. We were definitely committed, but I don't think we were very productive. So again, as a board member, the volunteer time, and if you aren't a member of an association and it's a paid position, you do know that you rely upon volunteers. So again, part of what comes out of our planning needs to be well positioned, that we are using the volunteers effectively and they don't feel that we're taking advantage of them. So with that in mind, let's set the stage a little bit further. These bullets came from multiple years of working again with organizations and associations as well as for profit. And these are four bullets that we've pulled together that seem to summarize common areas whenever we get involved with an organization or a company and start trying to determine where they are in their life cycle of planning.
David, go ahead. For those of you attending, if you have questions along the way, use the chat box. We make this as interactive as possible. And again, we're going to open up the line afterwards, so if you want to hold your questions in, that's fine too.
Yeah, thank you, Dana. Setting the stage, and again, as I go through these, think about your own organization and whether or not this seems to resonate with what you have going on. I have heard repeatedly that we basically know where we're going. We just need to clarify and communicate the strategy to the organization. Yes, yes, David, we know exactly where we want to go. We know exactly where we want to be. And then my typical question is, and for how many years now have you known where you want to be and where you want to go? And Then we usually get the chuckles, and, well, you know, time goes by, and the day gets filled, and we don't really get things organized. So, again, the vision may be clear, but the execution is definitely lacking. People tell us that we really have an issue that is execution. We think we know our strategy. We know we need to fundamentally change the way we operate in order to be more efficient. So our issue is really less strategy and more execution. Yet when you think about that and step away from it, it is typically the lack of execution is directly correlated to the fact that you don't necessarily have the appropriate strategy. So even though the people on the board might feel that their issue is 20% strategy and 80% execution, in many cases it truly is the reverse. A very quick side note to that, we were doing a retreat for an organization which was to help them develop a strategic plan. So we went off-site and we were going through the process, and the initial step was to say, okay, let's pull together all of the key initiatives that you feel you're trying to accomplish. And they pulled together a list of 143 initiatives. Now, I don't know about your organization, but I know within the work I've done with organizations, to try to execute 143 initiatives is probably about 135 to 138 more than is really practical. So we went through and started distinguishing that it really wasn't an execution issue. Clearly, with that number of initiatives, you're always going to have an execution problem. It truly was a strategy situation. And through the process that I'll go through with you in a little bit, we were able to bring down that 143 to really five critical initiatives that needed to be done immediately, and four that we categorize as growth initiatives, which means it's going to take a little bit longer, and there's a process associated with determining the viability of those growth initiatives. And again, I'll touch on that a little bit later on. We know how to improve, and our challenge is prioritize, have a plan, and hold people accountable. Probably the most difficult thing to do, particularly for a national organization that has tentacles reaching out across the country, is to hold people accountable. It is very, very hard unless you put very specific milestones and responsibilities in place for the initiatives you're trying to execute to hold people accountable. So again, they know how the challenge is the prioritization, back to my 143 initiatives, put a plan in place, and hold people accountable. And again, if the volunteers' world is a portion of that accountability, we need to make sure we've built the appropriate sensitivities into the plan to recognize we don't want to burn the volunteers. On that note, my wife, in the work that she does, she is also president of the pastoral council at our local church, and she must put in the neighborhood of at least 30 to 40 hours a week, mostly in the evening, much to the chagrin of my son and myself, putting things together, and in many cases being very frustrated because the church is moving at a different pace than what she wants to see accomplished. So again, we need to hold people accountable, but we need to be sensitive to the time. And then we always hear that we have a good strategy, even if we haven't stated it very explicitly. We need better alignment in the organization in order to support it. One of the areas that most strategic planning does not take into consideration is the impact on the infrastructure itself. In the for-profit world, we will hear a lot about our current revenue is X amount of dollars, and over the next 5 years, we're going to go to 10 times X and see how much we're going to increase the value. Or an association will say, our target is we're bringing in X amount of dollars worth of donation dues revenue. Our objective is to transition that into Y times that in the future. there is a phenomena that occurs within all strategic planning whereby the infrastructure itself under the current organization cannot keep pace with the growth. And you ultimately get to a point of diminishing returns where if you focus exclusively on revenue and not the availability of dollars, you end up having an organization that has a significant increase in revenue but less available funds to do anything with. So what we look at is what is the impact on the organization, on the infrastructure, and it's a major part of what goes on within the strategic planning itself. As a little side note, as I mentioned in part of the discussion, a lot of the opportunities that we have been involved with have been initiated by private equity investment firms. And there are really, just to help you set the stage for planning, and even though I know we're dealing with associations and for the most part not-for-profit, there is a lesson to learn from what investment firms look at when they try to value a target acquisition or to improve an operation. One is they look at the financial due diligence or financial performance of the organization. That goes without say. You know, is everything accountable for the dollars in, the dollars out, and what have you? Put the financial aside for a second. The other areas that they look at is the operational efficiencies. Are there areas within the operation of the organization or the company that we can gain some synergy, gain some productivity by looking at the operation itself, the process of moving paper, the process of exchanging information via whatever technique? Is there an operational improvement opportunity? The second one is in information technology, and Dana touched on the fact that we've worked in that arena as well, and that is, am I optimizing the use of technology today to keep the costs down, but more importantly, to bring value to all of our constituents? And then the last area happens to do with organizational or infrastructure. Is the organization set up in such a way that it can handle growth, that it can deliver what its mission and vision is for that organization? If there are major changes that need to be made either operationally, organizationally, or information technology-wise, then we need to keep those in the back of our mind because they will have a major impact on the finances of the organization. So again, is the organization in order to support it? Is it ready to go? That type of information is critical when you look at the performance of an organization itself. Moving forward to what is our association trying to accomplish? I put this in, and part of it was soul searching through the organizations I've been involved with, either directly as a board member or in a consultative role with that organization. Most associations fall into one or more of these different areas. That as an association, we want to provide value to the community we serve, either directly or through our chapter affiliation. That's the whole being of our organization, is to provide value. Unless we, even as a labor union, who may look at it and say that their role as a union is to negotiate on behalf of their members, it clearly has to be one of bringing value to the members. Otherwise, the membership is not interested in the association. That we want to energize a volunteer community allows more dollars to go towards the need of the service. A tremendous, tremendous challenge for most associations, which is even professional organizations where the membership and the volunteers are executives of their own businesses or businesses within that association. Again, it is a volunteer that we're trying to leverage, not abuse, but leverage so that more of the dollars that we collect go back to whatever service we are trying to provide. The open door of communication through multiple venues, including the internet, difficult challenge in today's day and age. There's good news and bad news with technology. Look at what we're doing right now. We're using technology as a vehicle to bring a lot of people together in a common presentation. The frustration, quite candidly, is that I can't look at any of you in the face and you can't look at me to see whether or not we're connecting, not connecting, what do we need to do. So again, we need to be in a situation where we want open door communication, but we want it to be meaningful and not misinterpreted. Operational expense to maximize funds available for the community. I touched on that a little bit on the operational efficiency. It's part of a byproduct of strategic planning, is making sure we account when we put initiatives in place that we're being very realistic about the financial investment and the expected return. To hold ourselves accountable with compliance, governance, and compliance issues are very important. I had the opportunity to launch a couple of not-for-profit organizations, 501c3. Both organizations were follow-up to an earlier comment I made about the training and education of caregivers. Part of a group I was associated with, we launched our own not-for-profit to raise funds to train more people as elder care service providers. And clearly there was a need to hold the appropriate meetings, to hold the appropriate minutes, to do the appropriate financial accounting so that there was no issue of compliance with our 501c3. And to leverage programs that work across chapters. In some of your organizations, there are regional differences that make a lot of sense. I'll give you an example. I mentioned to you about the association that was dealing with children and kids' needs. Well, clearly, when you get into the month of December and January, for families that may be living near poverty and you're trying to help their kids with school supplies, the need for getting into the regional areas, the appropriate winter clothing and appropriate meals for those cold winter days, versus maybe Southern California, where we're looking more towards a backpack and something a little easier for the student to carry. So to be able to be sensitive with the programs and know that in many cases it's not one shoe fits all, but to be able to be responsive across all the chapters and look at the history and the commitment of those chapters and make sure they're involved in the association. And the last one I put on, which is one that I ask a lot of members of national associations, when the day comes to an end, how are you going to measure your effectiveness? And measuring effectiveness in many cases is reserved for how the community supports the association, the donations, the involvement, but also keeping in the back of your mind, if you are a national organization and you do have chapters, that you need to be able to measure your effectiveness in also dealing with your chapters. So, having said all of that, wanted to move forward and see, given these are areas we want to accomplish, what are the issues associated with the board itself, both at a national level, and then let's look at it at a chapter level. And the reason I wanted to put all these things on is if any of these points are resonating with you, then it helps set the stage for the environment that ultimately will lead to the strategic planning. And again, I'm going to go through the strategic planning process with you in the remaining time, but I wanted to see if these issues do in fact set the stage appropriately for your organizations. From a national perspective, do we have the appropriate strategy in place? There is a tendency for national organizations to embark on 3 to 4 year strategies, and yet the board may turn over in 2 years. So again, it's a challenge. Are the strategies in place? Are they timely? Are the key roles of the executive board well defined? Particularly if the board is made up of volunteers, we have a tendency to try to expect the volunteers to work as employees, and they just don't have the time commitment. How do we measure the effectiveness on a national level? Are there 3 or 4 key performance indicators, not only that we're going to measure ourselves, but that we're going to send out to our membership as well as our chapters so they can come back and communicate to us that we are being effective and responsive to what they need? In a national convention, if any of you do have national conventions, and I've had an opportunity to speak at a couple of them, it's what value are you bringing? When those attendees leave the convention, are they walking away not only feeling good about the association, and certainly a portion of it is a socialization and getting to see other people, but are you walking away with some key initiatives and action items that will help make your regional performance that much more effective? And in a national organization with a national board, are you promoting regional differences but using some common national strategies? If something does work, the Salvation Army is a perfect example of national programs that do work, such as the collection at Christmas time, yet it is very sensitive at a regional level to respond to the needs of the local chapters, whether it's the thrift shops, whether it's donation stations, whether it's training programs for adult education, whether it is alcohol abuse. Several of those are national programs, but they are regionalized to take into account the geography. And what fundraising programs can we implement without diminishing revenue opportunities at the chapter level? Again, I'm not certain if this will affect some of you that are on the phone, but there are associations where I had mentioned that regionally they are raising their own funds through their own network. Are the regional offices, in fact, competing with a national organization so that if a regional office goes to a donator and says, I'd really like for you to support our program A, B, C, D, E, and that person comes back and says, boy, you know, I've already supported your organization at a national level. I don't know if I can afford to do it regionally. Are we, from a national perspective, being sensitive to that and working with our regional offices so they understand our direction and our strategy? So these are some of the issues that I know the board has to measure and weigh, and in many cases the members of the board have come in and gotten involved with the board because it's the community that they want to serve, and all of a sudden these other issues are surfacing, and through appropriate strategic planning we'll address many of these areas.
David, a question came in about vision planning. So I'm just going to paraphrase this. How a state or national organization can create a vision without having analysis by paralysis?
It's an interesting process. Creating a vision for many organizations that are already mature and been around, the vision is very, very clear. A vision statement is truly that. If I was to say to you, we're going to ride in the elevator for the next 20 seconds, and the first question, Dana, is, so tell me, who are you associated with? And you say, I'm associated with ABC organization. The logical question that will follow will say, oh, Dana, that's very nice. Well, what do you guys do? And that is really the vision. It's to provide whatever it is that you're providing to whatever community. In a strategic planning retreat, that vision statement in many cases already exists, and it's one of validation. But it truly is a statement that talks about what are you trying to accomplish and in what community. And it's something that should sustain the challenge of time. If it gets to a point where it is paralysis, then we are getting into goals and objectives as opposed to really a vision.
So if someone is... whether it's recycling or funeral or hospital, so a board doesn't get caught up in, yes, we need to take care of the talking about state issues that are going on for
right.
Environmental, but rather, let's look at 5 to 10 years down the road, where our members need to be thinking.
Absolutely. So if you touched on funeral, and that one is close to me because. We are associated with a particular cemetery that is close to our home, and most of our family members are buried there. Their vision is to provide, you know, one could callously say it's to put people in the ground and they're there and they're buried. Their vision is truly to create an environment where life goes on even in death. And when you look at that vision and you drive into that cemetery, you truly do experience that. And that's because they've now expanded those to particular goals and objectives that allow for the families who come there to experience that life going on. So it truly is, what do you see for your association in the future? Truly, what is that vision that you have? one little side note, and I'll come right back to where we're at, Dana, as well, is that by having a well-articulated vision which will sustain time, having some goals and missions in place, and we'll talk a little bit about some of those differences in a second, is truly a best way of testing whether or not an initiative is one that's going to work. For example, I am certain that tomorrow I could walk into any one of these associations and through some form of compromising their ethics, get some money into that association. But that's not what we want to do. So our mission, our vision, our values, our goals are put into a strategic plan so that when we come up with an initiative, that it does meet all of those criteria. But again, to your vision statement, it really should be when you close your eyes and you think to the future and why did you get involved with this association, that vision should be very clear.
And that's a cool exercise. Close your eyes and see, versus everyone getting all riled up over some emotional issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
The emotional
also,
issues.
I want to just be cognizant of our time. I realize I threw a question up from someone. So we have like another 10, 15 minutes or so until we open the line up.
No problem. So we'll move through these. And again, I appreciate the question, and we'll do some more when the line's open if anybody has any questions. Some issues for the board, the chapters, I'll touch very, very quickly. Let me jump right down there. I've seen associations where the association is made up of independent associations, each one of them their own 501c3. And, you know, again, nationally, what value are we bringing? What should we put into a national conference, national meeting? What value are we bringing to the associations? Having touched on all of these areas, I very quickly want to just touch on some of the benefits of the planning, if I haven't already made it pretty clear. We want to come up with a roadmap that allows focus. Time is our most precious commodity next to the financial resources, so we want to make sure we're not taking on more than we can. We want to make sure that the board and everyone associated with the board is on the same page. So when we do strategic planning, it is a unanimous agreement. When we do a strategic planning retreat, there will be a lot of heated discussions. But when we walk out of that retreat and we walk out as a board or a national association, we're all on the same page. A lot of execution of strategy is done through committees. We want to make sure those committees are set up productively, that they can have definitive goals that can be shared with the local chapters, regional chapters, that we know which direction we're going in. We're complying with the governance requirements of the 501c3, and that as we go forward and the board changes, that we have established the best practice so that we're not always reinventing the wheel and we have to retrain the board, that we do have a transitional process in place that will carry on over time. And the last point I put in there is putting fun back into an organization that's your passion. Many people who are involved with national organizations or regional organizations, particularly 501c3, it's because there is a passion to do some good in whatever area they're focusing on. And we want to make sure that that passion doesn't die and that we keep people happy and focused on what they enjoy doing. So having said all of that, let's now jump into just what the heck is this strategic planning. So here's what occurs in a good, solid strategic planning process. First of all, there is an area of the first step or phase. There's really three major phases to a strong strategic plan. The first phase is one of preparations, which is setting the stage. So typically, if you are particularly bringing people from different parts of the country, maybe the different parts of the world, together for a strategic planning retreat with the ultimate objective to come out with a very concise set of initiatives and a strategic direction to follow, you want to do sufficient preparation. So there is a series of interviewing that can be done where people are given a questionnaire, interviewed over the phone, via the internet, however you want to do it, or in regional meetings, where there is generally pulling together what have we done in the past, what are our feelings, where are we trying to go. So if you have a regional individual who's possibly president of a regional chapter who's going to come to wherever the national retreat's going to be to do the strategic planning, that individual can start doing the data collection, find out what's important from their constituents, their team, and then ultimately all of the regional people, or if it's just the national organization, that's fine too, put together a specific agenda for a planning retreat. And that agenda will be very closely monitored time-wise so that we're not focusing too much time on developing a mission, and then at the end of a day we walk out with our mission well-defined, but we have no initiatives. So again, we put that agenda together. I put together a comment in there about co-facilitation, leader identification, and not the president. The number one area for failure in any strategic planning is, in my opinion, is if the president of the association takes the lead in doing the strategic planning. Immediately what you end up having is someone who probably by definition is a dominating individual anyway, dominating a strategic planning retreat. Secondly, is it sets a stage where in some cases people feel inhibited about saying anything because they don't want to disagree with the president of the association. So even though the president of the association is involved in the strategic planning process, typically that individual, he or she, we ask to sit on the side. And in fact, planning retreats where I've co-facilitated, I've met with the president and kind of put together a little thing: when I scratch my head, then you can talk. If I don't scratch my head, keep your mouth shut. Something to that effect. The leader identification is someone who, within the association, is potentially someone who, in the next 2 to 3 years, might ultimately become president of the association, but more importantly, someone who is going to be tasked with the responsibility of coordinating all the activities and monitoring the strategic plan. And that person in a successful strategic planning retreat will work with a co-facilitator, someone like ourselves who have done this before, and will do the skill transfer and train them as they move forward. So the first phase is really preparing, pulling together what you have. And just so you know, for example, if you were working with Pebble, we have a whole series of templates and preset questionnaires that help pull all this together in a very, very easy and concise way, and a uniform way across regions. Second part is a planning retreat. Nothing elaborate. It's several flip chart stands, lots of tape, lots of coffee, and you basically use the planning retreat to execute the agenda that's been put together in the preparation. And in that planning retreat, you're going to reaffirm the mission, the vision, and values. And in a good retreat, those are written very, very concisely and taped up on the wall. Again, they're used as a benchmark for establishing key initiatives and timelines. And then the outcome of a good planning retreat is developing the specific action plans, budgets, teams, and committees for the execution itself. And I'll get into a little more detail in a second about breaking this down even further so you can see what has to come out in my mind from an effective strategic plan. So far we've done some preparation. We do the retreat where we're together. Typical retreat is a couple of days elapsed time with significant follow-up time put in, where that can be done via phone or conference call, however you want to do it. But typically the preparation time is a few weeks before the actual retreat, taking into account everybody's schedule. The retreat itself is usually a couple of days. Some organizations do it on a weekend to avoid any conflict with other work. And then the last step is actually the implementation. And now you're taking these strategies that you've put together, you're implementing it. The key is that someone has been designated, typically your facilitator, to monitor the performance, provide feedback, and communicate results. And a lot of organizations put together a central repository where all of the Gantt charts, which are the timelines and what have you, are in a central spot maintained by one person. So we're all working on the same page. If timelines change, then that individual is responsible for communicating it to everybody along the way. So having said all of that, what should come out of a good strategic plan? Here's the key bullets that I want to touch on to make sure that you're doing that in an effective manner. The mission, why we exist, we touched on that a little bit when Dana asked me some questions. The values, what do we believe in, and the vision, what we want to be. So our mission is why we exist, our vision is where we're going, and the values. Those three areas are key in evaluating, again, initiatives that we implement to make sure we're staying on target. There's a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses. Too many organizations focus in on their weaknesses and are concerned about addressing their weaknesses. What I prefer to do is look at your strengths and opportunities and see how we can capitalize on the strengths. For those of you who follow college basketball, John Wooden, well-known, obviously one of the most famous college coaches you'll ever see, his main focus was looking at the strength of his team and not worrying about their weaknesses and letting other people try to combat his strengths. We look at some key strategies, best case, worst case, most likely on the budget itself, and we then come up with what is going to be called a process known as chartering. And the chartering is a means where you actually list out the key initiatives, and I'll show you that in 1 second. We're almost through this, but I'll show you in 1 second what the components of a charter is. And what I wanted to emphasize is that all of the initiatives you're focusing on should be defined in two categories, either growth opportunities, which typically mean I need to do more analysis to see if this is an area I really want to address, whether it's through a marketing program or any type of reach out campaign. And critical few are immediate initiatives that we can implement over the next 5 to 8 months that are going to generate value for our association. I'll show you the chartering in a second, and then the last is in the components of a strategic plan is a central repository, as I mentioned, and the ongoing monitoring. The chartering process itself, this is something that we have used with multiple organizations, both for-profit and not-for-profit. And here's what you take. So, as I mentioned, you've taken your strategic planning and you've come up with 4 or 5 critical few initiatives, 3 or 4 growth initiatives. Each one of those initiatives is put into what I call a charter. In that charter, it talks about the background. Why are we doing this initiative? What are the key challenges? What is the overview and rationale that I can present externally and internally that says why I'm doing this initiative? What is my approach? How am I going to attack this particular initiative? What are my key steps? What are the scope and objectives associated with that initiative? What are the major milestones and deliverables that I can then see that I'm on target to initiate and implement this initiative? Who are the shareholders and resources? Who do I need as part of my team to buy in? Again, we may be looking at committees if we're a national association. Who's going to be involved? If you come up with 4 or 5 critical few initiatives, 3 or 4 growth initiatives, and the same person is on each one of these committees and running each one of these charters, then you know right off the bat you're doomed for failure. You need to look at the resources and how it's allocated. What is my budget? How much am I going to spend? Not only internal resource, but external. Do I have to buy some software to do this initiative? Do I need to buy books? Do I need to get a research firm? What do I need to do as far as the budget? And what are the assumptions, constraints, and concerns? The constraints and concerns, very, very important. You know, if you're making an assumption that the following resource is going to be available and then you find out the resource is not available, then you know that you're not going to be initiating this charter with any effectiveness. So again, what are my key assumptions? A good charter for an initiative is no more than about 3 to 4 pages long, and it's very concise, and it's a document that we then checkpoint against during the implementation phase. So if you can focus in on 4 or 5 critical few, 3 or 4 growth, now all of a sudden I have between 7 and 8 really key initiatives. Each one of those initiatives has a 3 to 4 page charter that says here's how I'm implementing it. You can see right off the bat I've taken what could be a very complex business and brought it down to about 32 pages of action items that gets divided up among the team. And that's my plan. Instead of a 14-inch binder, I have a very small set of tasks that I'm going to follow. On the implementation, keep those charters manageable. Again, I mentioned 4 to 5 and then 3 growth. Be realistic given you're using volunteers. If it's going to take you 6 months, say it's going to take me 6 months. If it's going to take you 2 years, then it's probably not a critical initiative if it's going to take you 2 years to implement. get the buy-in from the board. Make sure that when you get together with the membership or with a larger group, that you're able to articulate, these are the initiatives, here's what we're bringing to the table. Maintain the communication, make sure you have measurements, and balance the load so that more and more people are involved with what's going on. So again, the implementation, and as a co-facilitator, it's something that we assist as well with the facilitator, make sure that we're holding each other accountable. I kind of leave you with a thought about having fun, because you are doing something for the needy. You really should have enjoyment in what you're doing. Too many of us go to work and it becomes a drudgery. Let's do it because we're enjoying it. And in my final thought, before we move forward and take any questions, is if you choose not to develop a written plan, then you're going to go on a constant journey of trying to figure out where you're going and what your destination it should be. For those of you who have kids and maybe have read some fairy tales, I look at Alice in Wonderland, and when she gets to the Cheshire Cat and says, you know, I have a choice in the fork in the road, which way should I go? And the cat kind of says, well, if you don't really have a plan or know where you're going, then any fork will do. And I really don't want you going down the wrong fork. You, especially as associations, bring value to your members and to your community. And that is the critical, critical aspect. So if we can do an appropriate strategic plan, get you in the right direction, then you know that you're going to be bringing value to your membership. So that's kind of in a nutshell over about a 40-minute period to share with you some of the areas of strategic planning, some of the components, some of the challenges hopefully resonated with several of you as far as the challenges you're facing, and that the chartering itself and the strategic planning retreat is a very good investment of your time and resource to come out with action items that are measurable and bring value to your constituents. So, Dana, on that thought, I'll turn it over to you if there's any questions, and thank you all very much for listening to me with my cold and scraggly voice.
Hey, David, that was phenomenal. Thank you so much. For those of you on the line, hold the line. Don't go away. I need to close down this part of our program, and I want to turn the recording equipment off in just about a minute, and then we'll open up the line. So just a few minutes, we're going to conclude the show, turn the recording off, because we've had people in the past that like to ask questions, but they don't want their voice on a recording. You'll see in your screen an area to register for the upcoming May 27th Open Line program, Operational Excellence from Service to Delivery. Please sign up today, reserve your space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff, other colleagues, or other members of your association to attend. In the next few days, also, we'll be sending a recording and PowerPoints of today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or with your board, et cetera. David and I want to thank you for your time and for all the valuable ideas that David shared today. If you want to contact David to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, your board, or just have some one-to-one time, David's contact information is right there for you. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, or if you'd like to know more about the talks and presentations we give to associations nationally and internationally, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Hold the line. Have a great day. I'm going to turn the recording off, and we're going to open the line up then.